So what, says Miles Davis, and I'm saying, I'll tell you, so what? We're building bridges, not walls. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
Luis Feliz Leon is an associate editor and organizer at Labor Notes and a scholar in social movement history, making good trouble for working class empowerment. And he's fired up, won't take no more.
Luis Feliz Leon, we are making history this year, baby. That's your headline from the first day of the UAW stand-up strike. How does that strike and the UAW organizing campaigns in the South, which you've covered extensively, signal a revitalization, a new energy and strategy for organized labor?
Great question. The United Auto Workers show that electing reformers can create the conditions to transform a state organization into a fighting union, that organization can go on to strike and bargain lucrative contract gains that in turn spur new organizing. A virtuous cycle. We learned that workers at Volkswagen in Tennessee won a landslide election to join the UAW. Up next is Mercedes. The political class and their lackeys are throwing everything that they can at these workers, third-partying the union. But these union drives are worker-led, and they can be stopped.
Louis, obviously, this has all been kicked off by the UAW. But how has that effect had itself on workers and other unions and other professions around the country in terms of their organizing?
There's a couple of lessons to hold up about the UAW, right? So the first one is the UAW's reform leadership has slammed shut the book on company gift bags and made it possible to recouple power and democracy. For far too long, the conventional wisdom in the labor movement sacrificed democracy at the altar of power, a sort of expediency fueled by fear. We had to win at all costs, hurry, staunch the wound, bleeding out members, and to hell with how we get there. That how question ultimately ended up in efforts to shift the balance of power from the top. So everyone is looking to the UAW. Right now, the way that they're looking to the UAW is mixed, right? So it's important to say this next line that I've been repeating in a lot of interviews. There's no avenging angel that will save the labor movement. Only we will together. That's the class confidence and commitment to bottom-up action that we are seeing across the labor movement right now. Everyone is looking to the UAW, which historically it was the UAW was described as the vanguard of the labor movement, right? I think they're retaking that mantle. They are showing the rest of the labor movement, it's okay to strike. It's okay to take on the company bosses. Like, who wants a union that kisses the boss's ass? No one. Everyone wants to join a fighting union. And that's why all these workers at Mercedes, at Hyundai are standing up. To get more directly at your question, though, the impact that it's having on the rest of the labor movement, we'll have to wait and see. We don't want to oversell like the transformation. We are seeing that the UAW is in the line of march to a transformative labor movement that is political, that is fearless, that puts class struggle unionism on a national stage, but that work is still incomplete. It's incomplete within the UAW. You know, these folks have only been in office for about a year, these reformers. So there's still a lot to be done within the UAW. Unions are fundamentally democratic institutions. AJ Musty describes them as both a town hall and an army. The army component means that you have to enforce a picket line. So there's discipline that comes with that, right? And structure and some hierarchy. And then there's the town hall. There's the fact that a bunch of people with a lot of different political perspectives are thrown together into this organization that they help shape. And those things can create a ferment for debate. But it doesn't guarantee that everyone is going to move in one direction. So we have to continue to engage with members within our own unions around the questions of the day. And the question of the day right now is Palestine. And the question of solidarity that is at the core of our movement, an injury to one is an injury to all. That's Palestine. So we are seeing within the UAW, we are seeing within a lot of other unions, how these political questions are coming up. And we are seeing both the limits and the possibilities of this beautiful, democratic, multiracial labor movement that we have.
Luis, what you seem to be suggesting, and for me that's marvelous, is that returning back to the origins of May Day, which had a political core of empowerment of the workers' movement, of the working class, and that their associations were indeed a unit to accomplish that empowerment. Indeed, it meant governance of society. Do you begin to see now that from a long stretch of strictly economist union activities, certainly God knows the AFL-CIO is predominant in that, although they have been very political, but in an absolutely reactionary way, particularly internationally. Do you see now the politicization, again, of the various union organizations that are big unions like the UAW and others that are trying to unionize, the Amazon workers, the Google workers, the Starbucks workers, and other smaller units, and indeed immigrant worker associations? Is that something that's happening and should be happening?
Well, on the should, yeah, I'm a partisan of fighting labor movement. I am for fighting unions that stand for the working class. What I would say is that unions are fundamentally political organizations. To your point about the AFL-CIO and just the U.S. labor movement in terms of Israel, for instance, the consensus is breaking because students and the labor movement are working towards breaking the economic, ideological, and political foundations of the settler apartheid system Israel maintains in occupied Palestine. For the longest time, it was the opposite. The AFL-CIO and big unions, including the UAW, were staunch supporters of this settler colonial project. So I think it's important to both establish that unions are political. And even when a union, let's say, doesn't wade in, by not weighing in, that is a political decision. How we do that is tricky, because I also want to be mindful and not get too carried away with grand gestures, that the union also needs to move with its members. So a model union that did that in terms of Palestine, I would say, is the electrical workers, UE. They have, over decades, always held up a commitment to international solidarity, whether it was during the Vietnam War, in the 80s, in terms of the U.S.'s support of death squads in Latin America. They have always taken those stands, and the union has been filled with vibrant debate on these questions. I think sometimes in our anguish, as we see bombs dropping on children, whole hospitals, education systems decimated with U.S.-funded arms, we want like an immediate response. We want our union leaders to do something. However, that needs to be coupled with democracy and where the membership is at. And I think what we have seen is that the membership of many unions is with Palestine, is with the student movement across the country, and they are demanding a ceasefire. So I think that we are seeing rank and file energy, the likes of which we have not seen in a very long time. And that rank and file energy is moving big unions to be bolder in important ways. That's what I would say. In terms of some of these other campaigns that you mentioned, I think around immigration, unfortunately, I came to this movement as an ESL teacher of day laborers in Queens. And around the time there were raids in Jackson Heights, and there was a big climate of fear. And then there were these historic marches in 2006 that put the militancy of immigrant workers on the map. But since then, some of that energy has dissipated. And instead, what we have seen is that a lot of the piecemeal reforms, driver's licenses, in-state tuition for undocumented students, a lot of these things have come under attack. And there's a bipartisan consensus to scapegoat immigrants, to attack immigrants. I think that when it comes to immigrant workers, we'll have to see how things develop. But right now, I am really concerned but heartened by something that Sean Fain said at Labor Notes. Like, he said this before. It was basically, you know, immigrant workers are not the enemy. They are part of our union family. And I think that is the sentiment, you know, that we need more of in the labor movement. So when it comes to immigrant rights, when it comes to the fascist threat that we face, I think the jury's still out on how we are going to come together. I think a lot of the emphasis, rightly so, has been on the genocide unfolding in Gaza. But domestically, we are in for some really dark times. And I hope that the mobilizations that we have been all a part of help us to mobilize as well when the attacks are on the home front.
Luis, can you talk about some of the other campaigns that you're following? Not to get too much in detail on any one of them, but just some idea of the kind of fervent movement that's out there in addition to those you just mentioned.
Yeah, no, I've been covering the UAW so much because they're doing so much. It's hard to follow other stories. The unions that I follow, or Labor Notes, or the beats that I cover, include Mexican solidarity work. So I write a lot about the independent union movement in Mexico. So there's a lot happening there as well in terms of solidarity, cross-border solidarity. I also write a lot about Amazon. So right now at Amazon, at Labor Notes, we had about maybe close to 150 Amazon workers from various facilities across the country, many of them organizing independently, some of them organizing with the Teamsters. And a national network is coalescing around taking on this e-commerce giant. So that's really exciting. I think for Amazon, for the longest time, most of the coverage emphasized the degradation of working at these warehouses. And I think we're starting to see more of a shift towards what are the organizing strategies that we are seeing. Because for us, partisans of the labor movement, we know that workers are oppressed. That's what's different about the liberal media and the kind of media that we do, is we understand we live in this capitalist system that oppresses workers. The question that we try to ask is, how are they fighting back? So Amazon workers at an air hub in Kentucky are organizing just after workers at DHL across the street organized with the Teamsters and won a historic contract. That's really promising because these air hubs are really important for Amazon, and it's one of the largest in the country. So there's some organizing there afoot that will be interesting. There's also the Amazon Labor Union, which has its own reform caucus, and they are slated to have an election to elect new leaders in June. This was after the Constitution was basically changed from what workers had initially set up, that after they won, they would hold elections. And in a power move, some of the folks supporting Chris Smalls blocked that effort and changed the Constitution. And they've litigated that, and now an election will proceed in June. So that's also really interesting because, you know, the only union victory at Amazon was by this ragtag, you know, group of workers in the facility organizing themselves from the bottom up and taking on Amazon. So we'll have to see where that develops. Another important story in the labor movement is what's happening with Starbucks. You know, Starbucks workers in many ways have informed the strategy that the UAW is pursuing, right? So there's a combination, I like to say, of both momentum organizing, meaning that the workers are ready, they're ready to stand up, and then the union has to loosen the reins in order to catch the energy of the workers, which is similar to what happened with Starbucks, with all these stores filing. I forget the number right now, if it's over 400 stores that have unionized at this point or more. They're in bargaining right now with the company. They forced the company to the table. And I think, you know, at Mercedes, they actually, the union busters have pointed to Starbucks to say, look, just because you win an election doesn't mean that you will have a contract. Look at Starbucks. So I think it's important when, you know, just like these companies point to our failures, we need to point to each other's successes so that we can grow courage and heart that when we fight, we win.
Luis, you mentioned the politicization and you also mentioned Palestine of certain sectors of the labor movement. As a UAW member in Local 2325, the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, we have been subpoenaed by the Virginia Fox MAGA head of the Committee on Education and Labor to divulge the internal workings, the democratic workings of our union, which led to the creation of a ceasefire resolution that was voted upon by the total membership and passed. And I mention this to say that the right is not standing still, and it certainly wasn't only the issue of Palestine that provoked the Virginia Fox Committee representative of Georgia. They are looking to change the labor laws to make them even more restrictive and educational policy to preclude dissent and political expression. Your thoughts on whether the labor movement, notwithstanding the fact that there are 270 unions, which is glorious, that have come up with some kind of resolution, for example, for a ceasefire, which is really unheard of in the space of time in labor organizing in this country, for Palestine, ceasefire for Palestine. The question, though, is do you think that the labor movement as a whole is really tackling the political right? You described Trump as a fascist, but similarly, Sean O'Brien never asked the membership if there should be a support for Biden, who many people refer to as having blood on his hand for their stance or a lack of a stance in support of really a comprehensive ceasefire and self-determination. So just to push the envelope a little bit more, your thoughts on whether the labor movement is becoming more political in response to the onslaught from the hard right and even the Democratic Party, who after the elections generally does not respond in any meaningful way to the interests of the working class.
I think the labor movement writ large, I don't think they're there, but I do think members are. I think members are putting their bodies on the line. Like we just saw in New York in terms of the encampment, the transit workers union refusing to transport students that the NYPD had arrested. They did that during the Black Lives Matter protests as well. So we always have had these unions that in moments of counterattacks, either by the NYPD or other governing elites, they side with workers and students, and they've taken the moral high ground in those instances. But I think in terms of the threat that we face, should Trump win, or even if he doesn't win, I don't think the labor movement has mobilized in response to that in any meaningful way to counter that. I think that may change as we get closer, but I don't see that happening. And you know, one thing to note about our labor movement is that how decentralized it is. You know, unlike European unions, which have like their bargaining is like whole sectors, you know, that come together and bargain. In the U.S., we don't have that level of organization. So the UAW, I think it's trying to move in that direction around, you know, you mentioned May Day 2028, the UAW has called on other unions to line up their contracts. You know, there could be demands that go beyond bread and butter issues of collective bargaining and bolder demands like we need, I don't know, we need healthcare for all. You know, like it would be interesting to see what we can actually organize for and win, so that we begin to think more boldly about these possibilities and open new horizons of organization, like for the labor movement to kind of think strategically and flex its muscle. This is the thing about the right. You know, they already have a game plan should Trump win. They organize through the Chamber of Commerce. They organize through the, you know, the Republican Party at the local level. And we need to match that organization in order for us to win social justice for all.
I wonder if you could, the slogan should be, workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains and a world to win. In that spirit, you mentioned the organizing going on in Mexico, cross-border organizing. Certainly the UE has been exemplary in supporting the independent union movement of Mexico. Your thoughts and what you have experienced and can tell us about relevant to some of that organizing across the border in Mexico.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think these companies, especially in the auto sector, right, they try to whipsaw workers against U.S. workers against Mexican workers. And what the UAW is trying to do is whipsaw these companies against each other. This is what they did in the stand-up strike, where the UAW targeted all three companies and played them off each other to see who would, who would come to the table fastest and beg for mercy. So I think what we are seeing is the development of some of those links, because we have to understand that first, these companies retreated down south because, like, you know, they wanted cheaper labor. And then they moved further south to Mexico. And then from Mexico, they move even further out, you know, to China and so forth. So they've been offshoring jobs for many, many years. And the only way for us to combat that is for there to be no safe haven for worker exploitation anywhere. I think what the UAW is really smart, because they understand both from a moral perspective, right? Like, our movement is about a united working class, but also practically, our strategy is a united working class. Like, it's not just a moral imperative, it's the way that we win. That's the way that underdogs can maximize their power, because there's more of us than there are of them. The reason why they keep us divided and subjugated is because they have effectively divided us by national lines, by gender lines, by racial lines, and so forth. So our greatest strength is our unity. And it sounds cliche to say it, but that's the reality. Time and time again, we have seen that when workers come together, there's nothing that can stand in their way. And that's what we're seeing, you know, to tie it back to also Palestine, right? Like, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that in terms of the subpoena that you mentioned earlier, they are scared. The governing elite is scared because they see that a new consensus is forming. People are saying, we are not going to sanction a genocide, not in our watch, not on our watch. So history will absolve the students for their moral clarity and political conviction to oppose the genocide and organize for a free Palestine. History will absolve the auto workers for not giving in to petty nationalist calculation that, you know, we are going to vilify Mexicans in order to retain these jobs here. They're lifting up new possibilities of worker solidarity. And one day, you know, there will be seminars filled across this country where people will study both the tactics of the student movement, the encampments, and what the UAW is doing in terms of talking about class struggle unionism, talking about solidarity across borders. And, you know, we are walking in the footsteps of troublemakers fighting for the liberation of the oppressed. Just like abolitionists and labor activists fighting for an 8-hour workday in the 19th century, civil rights leaders in the 20th century, We are going to change the course of history in profound ways. We are just getting started.
Yep, labor and community relations, labor and student relationships. We have the power. We are mighty. We are the collective fist rather than the individual fingers, and we can make it so. And because we do what? Well, we educate, agitate, and organize to empower the working class. And as you've been saying, we have a reinvigorated, really aggressive new labor movement on the horizon. And it's flexing its muscle because we have nothing to lose but a world to win. Luis Feliz León, thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And this is but the beginning of many exuberant, encouraging days for organized labor and to organize labor of the world to create that beautiful new world, the beloved community that we work so hard for.
I'm Amy Rosenberg.
I'm Karen Nash.
We are building bridges and telling you to educate, agitate, and organize to empower we, the people, for another world is possible, and we are the ones who can make it so, and for a free, free Palestine from the river to the sea. Thank you for listening.